Brothers and sisters, friends and comrades, greetings on International Workers' Day. And when it comes to May Day, workers have been treated like mushrooms. We've been kept in the dark and covered with bullshit. Even observing May Day has been considered un-American. They said it was a Russian holiday or a communist holiday. The FBI called it a Chinese holiday in 2001. Under Herbert Hoover, it was Child Health Day. In the 50s, it was renamed Loyalty Day and Law Day. Instead of militant marches and picket lines, they wanted us to have picnics in the park and forget that May Day was born in the USA in the struggle for the eight-hour day. They bury the truth that mostly immigrant workers who, suffering intolerable hours, took their demands to the streets and were met by deadly police state force and violence. Right after the Civil War in 1866, the National Labor Union made the first countrywide demand for an eight-hour day. That was immediately picked up in Geneva by the International Working Men's Association, a group organized by a guy named Karl Marx. And he made it a demand of the workers of the world. And with work days of 10, 12, 14, and 16 hours, the eight-hour day was seen as the starting point to improve workers' lives. It was the imperative basic step of our working class to organize. Yeah. In 1884, the Knights of Labor demanded an eight-hour day, and within 2 years, their membership grew from 200,000 to 700,000. The same with the Federation of Organized Trades and Labor Unions, which swelled and reorganized as the AFL with a preamble that said, quote, "A struggle is going on in the nations of the world between the oppressors and the oppressed of all countries, a struggle between capital and labor, which must grow in intensity from year to year and work disastrous results to the toiling millions of all nations, if not combined for mutual protection and benefit." And it's no less true today. A song, the verses of a song rang out across the country. "We mean to make things over. We're tired of toil for naught but bare enough to live on and never an hour for thought. We want to feel the sunshine. We want to smell the flowers. We're sure that God has willed it and we mean to have 8 hours. We're summoning our forces from shipyard, shop, and mill. 8 hours for work, 8 hours for rest, 8 hours for what we will." In those 2 years, 600,000 workers struck 1,572 times. And on May 1st, 1886, about 500,000 workers hit the streets with parades and picket lines. Over 80,000 came out in Chicago, winning the eight-hour day for 45,000 packing house, construction, and clerical workers, and gaining reduced wages for 90,000, reduced hours for 90,000 others. The Chicago Tribune, in retaliation, said, "A communist carcass for every lamppost." And the workers were chanting, "Whether you work by the piece or work by the day, decreasing the hours increases the pay." On May 3rd, that 2 days later, police attacked an eight-hour strike at the McCormick Reaper Company, killing 6 workers. Bilingual leaflets brought out 4,000 people in the rain to protest at Haymarket Square the next day. By 10 p.m., with about 200 protesters left, the rest had melted away. 170 cops marched on them. A bomb was thrown, killing one cop and fatally wounding 6 others. The cops opened fire at the workers, killing 6 and wounding untold numbers of others. A police reign of terror was unleashed against trade unionists, foreigners, and radicals. The majority of workers were immigrants, as I said. Homes were broken into, meetings were invaded, and their presses were smashed. The Illinois Attorney General said, quote, "Make the raids first and look up the law afterwards." One nonconforming editor wrote, quote, "Corrupt judges and police, who are slaves of monopoly, are now dragging citizens to prison by the wholesale." And a law journal called for, quote, "a check upon immigration." Hear the echo in Schwarzenegger. He called for deportations and better equipment for the police to protect property from being, quote, "at the mercy of a few long-haired, wild-eyed, bad-smelling, reckless, foreign wretches." Those arrested were beaten, tortured, and bribed to build evidence for an indictment. 8 men, 7 from the Central Labor Union, were charged with conspiracy and murder. The jury was openly stacked. Headlines screamed for hanging. One judge said, quote, "The evidence was pure fabrication by terrorized innocent men facing torture if they refused to swear to anything that was desired," unquote. Ideas were on trial, not deeds. None of those charged had anything to do with the bomb or the violence. Only 2 were at the Haymarket at the time, yet 7 were condemned to death. The prosecutor told the jury, quote, "These men have been selected and indicted because they were leaders. They are no more guilty than the thousands who follow them. Convict these men, make examples of them, hang them, and you save our institutions and our society." Lucy Gonzalez Parsons, of African, Mexican, and Native American origins, who had been run out of Texas by the Ku Klux Klan with her husband, Albert Parsons, campaigned relentlessly for the defense. The work of Lucy Parsons, more than any other person, brought the case into the national and international spotlight. Her speeches and organizing made the Haymarket affair a global working class call to action. When AFL founder Sam Gompers followed her lead and said, "Labor must do its best to maintain justice for the radicals or find itself denied the rights of free men," he appealed to the governor, and the sentences of Michael Schwab, Samuel Fielden, and Oscar Niebe were commuted to life imprisonment. Proclaiming their absolute innocence, Albert Parsons, husband of Lucy, August Spies, George Engel, and Adolf Fischer were to be legally lynched on November 11, 1887. Lucy Gonzalez Parsons brought her 2 young children to see their father the day he was to be hanged. The jailers denied the visit. Instead, the two children and Lucy were stripped naked and thrown into a jail cell until the gallows trap was sprung. And before the hangman did his deed, August Spies shouted, quote, "You may strangle this voice, but there'll be a time when our silence will be more powerful than the voices you strangle today." No major paper opposed the trial or the verdict. Burial sites were refused in the city. The city denied funeral marches the right to have flags, speeches, or music other than dirges. In defiance of the entire media, the entire government, 500,000 people, more than half the population of Chicago, lined the streets to honor the fallen martyrs. Half the city. The Red Scare and anti-immigrant hysteria following the Haymarket affair was said to have set back the 8-hour day movement. Actually, the bomb, evidently thrown by a police agent, and its aftermath, set off a global chain of events seen as the beginning of the modern labor movement. In 1888, the AFL honored the Haymarket events by targeting May 1890 for actions to win the 8-hour day. Gompers sent a delegate to the International Workingmen's Congress in Paris asking for simultaneous international May Day actions to back up the 8-hour demand. That Congress agreed and added to the 8-hour movement the struggle for peace between workers of all nations and the vision of socialism. On International Workers' Day 1890, marches and strikes took place across the USA, in Europe, and even in Australia, when 1,000 shearers marched in Queensland, West Australia. Chicago saw over 30,000 marches from more than 100 unions, led by the Carpenters Union and the Socialist Labor Party. Two of the Carpenter signs were, "We live by labor, not by war," and "Abolish wage slavery." The largest demonstration with 500,000 workers was organized in London by Evelyn Aveling Marx, daughter of Karl Marx. The New York World saw the event as labor's Emancipation Day, one of the most powerful demonstrations in history. More than 10,000 marched in Los Angeles, led by carpenters and plumbers. I'm a plumber. I'm proud of that. Bay Area building trades workers won agreement for the 8-hour day, and the San Jose Mercury said, "There was no disturbance, no strikes, no discord on May Day in the whole state of California." The Santa Cruz Sentinel wanted boss worker cooperation and railed the next day against, quote, "blatherskites, loudmouthed and red-handed anarchists who are doing all they can to," I raise the fist, but it's really the left fist, "who are doing all that they can to arouse and keep up a spirit of warfare between capital and labor." May Day actions won 8 hours for many thousands of workers and shortened the workday for many thousands more. And Gompers again said, "Agitation for the 8-hour movement has given courage and hope to the working people against the encroachment of the employing classes. Every trade and labor union in the country has vastly increased its membership. They gave workers a vision, and workers met the vision. It's what we have to do today." Chicago was the Silicon Valley of its day. It had new industry and vast unearned wealth amid devastating poverty. The workers were desperate to survive and willing to struggle. The 8-hour movement gave them a concrete cause, and they joined the unions and made them tools to shake the pillars of class power. While our militant heritage has been suppressed in our country, it's honored and celebrated by workers in almost every corner of the globe. Workers from abroad know more about May Day than those educated here by far. In Mexico City, the streets are traditionally filled with marching workers every May Day. Even the newspapers shut down. In Mexico's Palace of Justice, a Diego Rivera mural depicts the Haymarket scene and the martyrs' portraits. In the Philippines, the biggest union is named after May Day. Australian workers have celebrated every May Day but two since 1890. Venezuela, Haiti, Colombia, Iraq, India, China, South Africa. We are, as workers, we are everywhere. The Chicago martyrs have had a stunning influence. We still fight for shorter hours, better conditions, health care, and security. But to live to the example of Lucy Gonzalez Parsons, who was to Chicago police, quote, "more dangerous than 1,000 rioters," we have to shake our labor movement out of business as usual. We have to create a vision of a future free of military aggression and institutionalized poverty. The gallows, and I'll repeat it, that there will come a time when our silence will be more powerful than the voices you are strangling today. That hangman interrupted the last words of Albert Parsons as he shouted, "Let the voice of the people be heard." In 2005, let the power of our voice be heard, ending preemptive wars for U.S. imperial domination, yeah, ending the Iraq occupation, and in Albert Parsons' own words, give voice to the vision of the right of toilers to the free and equal use of the tools of production and the right of the producers to their product, socialism. Let us rebuild our unions to fulfill the vision of August Spies, as he defied his legal lynch mob in court, saying, "If you think that by hanging us you can stamp out the labor movement, the movement from which the downtrodden millions who toil and live in wanton misery, the wage slaves, expect salvation, if this is your opinion, then hang us. Here you will tread upon a spark. But here and there and behind you and in front of you and everywhere, flames will blaze up. It is a subterranean fire. You cannot put it out. To truly honor May Day, the hanged martyrs, and the work of Lucy Gonzalez Parsons, we have to be part of that fire. Thank you.